oil production should last year. There was some leadership instability in the South African national level for the appointment of acting commissioners and acting divisional commissioners and so forth. And particularly in crime intelligence as well, Chair. And that changing of the deck chairs contributed to the instability of the leadership of SAPS. What helped was the finalization of the retirement of General Ndluli, the former head of crime intelligence. And there's been a steady decline in levels of violent crime. but those percentages decreases were negligible in all categories. We haven't seen huge jumps of over 10%. Most of it has been below 10%. The contact crimes increased by 1.9%. And then the trio crimes increased. Carjackings increased. We heard yesterday as well. And then robbery at residential premises and robbery at non-residential premises increased. Now, when the National Commissioner came in, he did indicate that he's putting together a task team on these trio crimes. And we still have to see how far, when the crime stats are released, how far that has benefited the picture as far as crime is concerned. And furthermore, in terms of the context, we've also seen criminal attacks on police officers seeking to combat and investigate crime. We've seen the killings of police officers in Nobo, in the Eastern Cape, and in other parts of the country, in the Western Cape as well. The ability of the police to rebuild public confidence and trust has shown a downward trend. And that is serious. If you look at the satisfaction levels with the police, which have dropped according to the Victims of Crime Survey, the 2016 one, then we ought to be worried about that, because the morale of the police is something that the committee must look at. Chair, the budget recommendations from the committee in 2017 stated that the department should align all its APP targets to the medium-term strategic framework targets in order for SAPS to meet the objectives of the NDP. And then these are only some of the recommendations. We've had many recommendations. The SAPS reinserts, we recommended that the SAPS reinserts the targets which was removed from the 2017-18 APP targets for the detection rate for the detectives program. There was a recommendation that SAPS invest in CCTV cameras at all police stations and that body-worn cameras must be worn by frontline police officers. As the committee also recommended that SAPS reviews all targets in all its programs, including those not attained and those whose targets are too low and aligned with the medium-term strategic framework. A special effort must be made to deal with the detectives program with respect to trial-ready dockets. There was a big discussion amongst the members around trial-ready dockets in particular. And then one of the other recommendations was that the department completes the outstanding assessments of all national key points as per the performance indicator within the third quarter of the 2017-18 financial year. Some of the gaps, Chair, is in the APP, the APP is largely silent on the building of public trust and confidence in the police. This is the big theme that resonated yesterday with all the presenters raising this issue. The committee recommended that the SAP should consult when it compiles its budget with police trade unions, with civil society and the public when it comes to compiling the priorities for the budget. The reduction of staff as a result of the cut in the compensation of employees and plans to mitigate the loss of staff over the medium term is something that ought to be looked at and how it will affect police stations in particular. And then the roles of the community police forums and the community safety forums wasn't clearly spelled out in the APP. And then the supply chain management processes the ICT FDA contracts was raised in SCOPA. It was not specifically raised in the portfolio committee on police, but there was a hearing on the 24th of May on supply chain management. And on the 31st of October, we also brought the audit committee of SAPS here, Chair, to talk about this, and none of this was raised within the committee at the time. And so there was no provision for lifestyle audits in the APP in order to give effect to the priority of fighting crime. So when is it going to start? How it will pan down? How will it will cascade from the top layer down to station level? There's nothing about that in the EPPG. The gaps, the SAPS plans and timeframes to procure new generation Nihalas is not included. This is critical to protect police officers' lives, and particularly when one looks at the increase in public order protests. And then the targets for detectives on trial ready dockets have not been reviewed in line with the committee's recommendation. It's still the same. The DPCI performance target remains low and is unacceptably low. It's been raised in the committee before. The footprint of crime intelligence should be considered by the committee, and whether the location of crime intelligence at the cluster level and not station level is the correct level for it to reach for its own reach and its efficacy. So this has been something that the committee has focused on last year to make crime intelligence more effective at station level. And the greatest concern should be the numbers of early warning system reports that crime intelligence generates. This came up yesterday as well, especially with respect to public protests and public order violence. And then the total evaluation of audits of strategic installations whose targets increased marginally from 41.36 in 2018-19 from 49%. So that increased, but we said they must complete it. And then the concerns was ICTS and the supply chain management environment and susceptibility to corruption in these environments, integrity testing and vetting of key personnel in crime intelligence, that ought to have been completed, and then lifestyle audits for key personnel in SAPS, and then protection of police officers from being killed in the line of duty, leadership stability at national and provincial levels. The impact scores show that SAPS has a problem with ethics and leadership in its scores. That's the management performance assessment tool from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. And then lastly, the implementation of the Auditor General recommendations. Chief, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Kinnis. Members, that's just a snapshot just to remind members of the issues that were discussed in the previous round and also the analysis from the researchers, so that's issues that members can raise during the interaction. Yes, you're welcome, Honourable Colabana.
Yeah, I'm always looking for a reason when targets are removed. And the doctors raised the issue of the target detection rates in the detectors. Mm. I just wondered if we could have an explanation for that, or should I rather raise... I don't know if I can raise each one under separately, but...
Yeah, in terms of SAPS, I mean, when we go to that program, we can deal with that. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, if there's any clarification for Dr. Kinnis, you covered, right?
Okay.
Right. Thank you very much, members. So let's continue then with the hearing. I'm going to give now an opportunity to the National Commissioner General Sithole just to introduce his additional delegation that's with us today. You're welcome, General.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and good morning to Honourable Members and all others. In attendance. Chair, maybe it's important for me to start with the formal introduction of the newly appointed head of crime intelligence, Lieutenant General Jacobs, and I would like him to rise so that everyone knows. Oh, he's still out.
Yeah.
Okay, he knows. He's coming. He's still undercover. Much has been exposed with CI. Part of the delegation today is Lieutenant General Waima Takata, the acting head of DPCI. Can just make an indication. Thank you. Lieutenant General B.C. Ngwenya, Deputy National Commissioner HR. Lieutenant General Skete, Deputy National Commissioner Management Intervention. Lieutenant General Vuma, Deputy National Commissioner Asset and Legal. Lieutenant General Pierre Ramikos, the CFO. Lieutenant General N.S. Mukwanazi, Divisional Commissioner Human Resource Development. Lieutenant General S.J. Gwena, Divisional Commissioner HRU. Lieutenant General, I'm not sure whether I've seen General Motiva. Lieutenant General Motiva, Regional Commissioner. It's not here. Okay. Lieutenant General R.J. Magwena, Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain. Lieutenant General, Shazi Divisional Commissioner, Technology Management Services. Lieutenant General Imawela, Divisional Commissioner, Operation and Response. Lieutenant General NP Masia, Divisional Commissioner, Visual Policy. I'm sure General Dekos is there. I think you can just rise for your formal introduction. This is now the new person carrying the future of policing at CI. He made me a promise that he's going to silence all the noise about CI. It's from today or not. We're just going to work and fight crime. He's an action-orientated person, doesn't speak a lot. Lieutenant General Injinga, Provincial Commissioner, Eastern Cape. Major General BP Langa, Acting PC KZN. And they will be leaving earlier, Honorable Chair. They're going to go and prepare for the... Yes, and also General Lucas and General Simula, because we need to support the minister with the MINMEC. And I'm sure my apology has also been tendered up front at 10. I'll just take another small team to go and present to the select committee, and General Ngwenya will be leading. Then there's Major General Rabi, Component Head Strategic Management. Major General Nelson, Head Financial Services, Budget and Expenditure. Brigadier V. Naidu, the spokesperson of the National Commissioner. Brigadier L.S. Malasela, Section Head Executive Secretariat. Brigadier J. Surabali, Section Head Strategic Management and Analysis. And Colonel Stain for the Parliament. There's Lieutenant General Magadela, I'm sorry, that's down the list. And I also just need to formally announce this is the new Acting Divisional Commissioner for Forensic Services. And he has already started doing good job there. And there's Major General Ngoka, is also from a forensic. Then there's Brigadier M. Lawuzi, the spokesperson, DPCI. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, General. I'm also pleased to announce that we've got a quorum for the committee. So I'm going to give an opportunity to the quorated members to introduce themselves.
Melang Bahaitu, Lina Lakakana and Jimulivazi, the local committee in Miguel Leboha.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. I thank you.
Dimashorone Avuti, Dine Mabisha Leboan.
Thank you, Chair. Sanbonani Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Hi, it's Diane Kolobana, also a member. Thank you.
Sanbonani Philip Mshongwe, member of the committee.
Thank you very much, members. Without further ado, let's go to program one. General Sikole.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. General Rabi will lead the presentation. Thank you.
Honorable Chair and members of the committee, good morning. We will continue the presentation where we ended yesterday, focusing on Program 1. Program 1 in the SAPS vote refers specific to the support or administration environment, and the indicators that are included in Program 1 is 95% of that is continuation of indicators that have been included for the purpose of the medium-term expenditure framework, the medium-term strategic framework, that in, and we are currently in the last year of the current MTSF. As far as Program 1 is concerned, this is where it fits into the overall five programs of the South African Police Service. Program 1, the name is Administration. And the purpose of the program is to develop policy and manage the department, including your administrative support. And the sub-programs associated with the program is the sub-program for management, sub-program corporate services, and the sub-program for the civilian secretariat. As far as the budget is concerned, Honourable Chair, we're associated with Programme 1. The detail of the budget was presented yesterday by the CFO. We are just highlighting again the portion of Programme 1 as far as the expenditure estimates are concerned. If we look at the sub-programmes, Ministry, Management, Corporate Services and Civilian Secretariat, expressed in millions, you will see in 2017-18, for the Ministry, this was 63 million. It's going down in 2018-19 to 62 million. Management is 77 million, going up to 81 million. Corporate Services is 18.3 billion, going up to 19.1 billion. And then the Civilian Secretariat, 125 million, going up to 131 million. And the total expenditure estimates associated with the SAF program is 18.6 million going up to 18.6 billion going up to 19.4 billion in the 2018-19 financial year. As far as the specific notes are concerned, the second bullet at the top, at the bottom, the Civilian Secretariat for Police is a designated department as is reflected as a transfer payment in the vote. Police amounting to a total of 131 million in 2018-2019. Corporate services consist inter alia of human resource development with an expenditure estimate of 2.3 billion, TMS with an estimate of 3.6 billion, supply chain management 4 billion, of which 824 million is for capital works, human resource management with an estimate of 1.4 billion, financial services, 998 million, and corporate support, 1.2 million. And significant funding levels, especially for the CJ's revamp initiative, it's 747 million. For the IT portion vested under Program 3 Detective Service, IJS project, 254 million, and hosting a network infrastructure upgrades within the TMS environment. So moving into the specific indicators associated with the respective objective statements within the program, you will note that we use a specific color coding where we indicate the green button. It is where the target is linked to specific goals of the National Development Plan and also objectives that have been set within the medium-term strategic framework. And where there's a blue icon indicated, it reflects a link to either the DPSA requirements or FOSAT requirements that we have to include in our annual performance plan of the South African Police Service. I'm not going to repeat the strategic objective every time. Honourable Chair, you will note if you look at the layout of the presentation on top, we will reflect the strategic objective in this case. It is to regulate the overall management of the department and provide centralized support services. In the first column, we will state the objective statement. In this case, it is the establishment of an adequate human resource capability with emphasis on the following: the investigative capacity of SAPS, the intelligence gathering capacity of SAPS, and the operational environment. In the second column, we will then reflect the performance indicator indicators in some cases that are associated with the objective statement. In this case, as far as this specific objective statement is concerned, we have two performance indicators. The first one, the percentage of full post in terms of the approved establishment, and the target is then set at maintaining a minimum workforce of 98% in terms of the approved establishment of 192,431. On this specific point, Honourable Chair, it is important to note that when we move to questions and comments that there will be more detail provided on the establishment of SAPS, as it was also highlighted by the National Commissioner yesterday as far as our current business case to Treasury is concerned. The second indicator talks to the percentage of vacant funded posts filled within the prescribed time frame from the date of advertisement. And the target that we set is that 90% of the vacant post within SAF must be filled within 6 months from the time that the post is advertised. Honourable Chair will note on this slide the first indicator, as far as the establishment target of 98%, that is directly derived from the NDP goals as well as the targets of the commitments that are set in the medium-term strategic framework. The second target when it comes to the filling of vacancies relates to FOSAT of a DPSA requirement that has been specifically set for government departments. and in this case specifically the South African Police Service. The next slide, we're continuing with the objective statement of establishing an adequate human resource capability. The third performance indicator is the percentage of finalized service terminations submitted to GPA within the 60 working days from the date of the employee's exit from the service. And our target is set at 68% of the finalized service terminations must be submitted to GPA within 60 working days from the date that the employee exit the service. And this specific performance indicator also relates to a FOSSAT DPSA requirement. The next indicator, linked to the same objective statement, relates to the percentage of people with disabilities employed in relation to the total workforce. And our target remains at 2% of members with disability employed in relation to the total workforce of the South African Police Service. Moving to the next objective statement associated with the program, namely the transformation and professionalization of the service. The first performance indicator is the percentage of learners assessed to be declared competent upon completion of their training in terms of the training provisioning plan of the South African Police Service. And our target is set at 97% of the 54,720 learners to be declared competent upon completion of their training. Moving to specific training prioritized areas, as required in terms of the National Development Plan and MTSF requirements, training relating to public order policing, our target is set at 97% of the 1,670 learners to be declared competent. Training relating to the crimes committed against women and children, target is set at 97% of the 5,727 learners. Training that relates to crime investigation, 97% of the 8,320 learners to be declared competent. And then training relating to forensic science investigation, target set at 97% of the 7,912 learners to be declared competent. On the same objective statement, Honourable Chair, the next indicator on slide 50 is the percentage of learners assessed to be declared competent upon the completion of their training in terms of the same prioritized areas. Cybercrime, it's 97% of the 833 learners as identified in the TPP to be declared competent. On slide 51, Chair, we are under the same objective statement. The next indicator talks to the operational members to be competent in the modules, legal principles, and the use of firearms, handgun. That has been declared one of the priorities, and the target is then set at 98% of the learners to be declared competent. Our number of internships undertaken, the target is set to increase it with 10% to 1,047 internships. The finalization of disciplinary matters within the South African Police Service, the target is set at 90% of disciplinary cases to be finalized within 60 calendar days. On the same objective statement, with reference to the recommendations that are being made by IPID, or the Independent Police Investigative Directorate, as far as the recommendations are concerned, 100% of the to be initiated within 30 days, or 30 calendar days from the date that we received the recommendation from IPID, and then on the same type of indicator talking to the finalization of disciplinary cases, the target is set at 90% of those to be finalized within 60 calendar days as indicated. The next objective statement, Honourable Chair, talking to the improvement of infrastructure and the development of public access to policing services. The percentage of planned police facility project completed as per the infrastructure development plan in respect of the following prioritized areas. As far as capital works is concerned, the target is set at 80% of the 12 that has been targeted. Planned maintenance, 80% of the planned 85 as indicated in the last column. The number of new mobile contact points to be distributed, the target is set at 15. And the number of detention facilities to be maintained, the maintenance to be completed, the target is then set at 4. Moving now to vehicles and other type of resources, improving requisite resources to sustain quality service delivery on strategic priorities. The first indicator refers to the ratio of personnel to vehicles, and the target is set to maintain our ratio at 4.51 personnel to every vehicle that is in operational vehicle available in SAPS. Next indicator talks to the percentage of active vehicles available for policing in relation to the total vehicle fleet, and the target is set to have 85% from a total of 42,000 vehicles available for policing operational duties. Percentage of firearms to be procured and distributed in relation to the demand. The calculated demand for firearms procurement and distribution is 3,000 firearms, Honorable Chair, and the target is set to distribute, to procure and distribute the total 100% of the calculated 3,000 demand. The percentage of bullet-resistant vests to be procured and distributed in relation to the demand. The calculated demand, Honorable Chair, is 15,551. A target is then set at 100% of the bullet-resistant vests to be procured and distributed in line with the demand of calculated at 15,551. Honorable Chair, moving to the next objective statement that talks to the enhancement of information systems and information communication technology to support the business objectives of the South African Police Service. The three indicators that we utilize for this purpose is based on the number of deliverables, deliverables that are being associated with the three categories. In the first category, the target is set at 95% of the infrastructure, information communication technology, infrastructure deliverables needs to be achieved in the specific financial year as determined in the related project plans. Moving to the next one that talks to the percentage of prioritized information system solutions deliverables to be achieved, the target is set that 85% of the deliverables identified in the relevant projects to be achieved within the financial year. And the last one talks to the governance deliverables to be achieved as far as information systems and information communication technology is concerned. The target is set at 85% of the deliverables to be achieved. I was then talking to sound financial management, an indicator that originates from the FOSA DPSA requirement is that talks to the payment of legitimate invoices. Our indicator is the percentage of legitimate invoices paid, and the target is set at 99% of all legitimate invoices to be paid within 30 days. The objective statement inculcating a culture of uncompromised compliance and performance management. As far as the audits are concerned, the percentage of audits to be completed in terms of the approved internal audit plan. The submitted audit plan that has been approved indicates a total of 236 audits to be conducted, and the commitment is that 100% of those audits must then be finalized. Percentage of management intervention executions to be evaluated. This is a continuation, Honorable Chair, of the projects within the management intervention environment, and the target is set at 270 service points that has been identified. The intervention executions must be evaluated within the upcoming financial year. And then lastly, as far as the objective statement is concerned, the percentage reduction in the material findings, audit, findings issued by HGSA. The target that we've set again for this financial year is to achieve a 50% reduction in material findings issued by the Auditor General of South Africa. Honorable Chair, that concludes the indicators associated with Program 1.
Thank you very much. Members, we will go to questions. The first three from my side, and then we'll go to the members. One question, National Commissioner, that you didn't respond to yesterday. I think Honorable Kola Barnard asked a question on the issue of lifestyle audits. Now, in terms of management, 77 million rand, 81 million rand is allocated to that sub-program this year. The President of the Republic indicated in his response to his speech in Parliament the importance that the executive will be they will be given the necessary investigations with regard to lifestyle audits. You also gave a commitment to this committee that towards the end of March the policy will be finalized. So if you can just give us an update, where are we in terms of that in terms of lifestyle audits for top SAPS members and also your areas of vulnerability. Then secondly, and yesterday we also briefly raised the issue of contract management. And if you look at the budget of Program 1, there's actually 7 billion rand in that environment that is high risk for the organization. And I refer specifically to the issue of technology management services, 3.6 billion rand, and then also ICT, supply chain, 4 billion rand. Now, National Commissioner, we need certain assurances from you. We will, of course, have in June a full-day hearing on the issue of contract management within the ICT environment in SAPS. But we actually need, from your side, explanation, also from the divisional commissioner. What's going to be done going forward in terms of the evaluation of technology bits? I mean, there's been a policy by government that above a certain percentage or value, National Treasury must be involved. Can we get an indication of your current contracts? Is National Treasury involved in the evaluation of those contracts? And then also the whole principle of the revolving door. If I am a member of SAPS and I leave SAPS and I then become a contractor, what is the policy? Is there a cool-off period of 5 or 7 years? Or if I'm now a divisional commissioner, can I tomorrow when I leave SAPS, then I'm in the bidding process and probably my bidding contract will get maybe preference. I just want to get an understanding, what is the current policy? And in terms of the risk that we identified yesterday, what is being done to address that? Let's go to the members. Honourable Kola Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I think that, Chair, is a prime point. It's about procurement and this massive issue. It's like an elephant in the room because it certainly wasn't raised here previously. The issue of supply chain management staff going on a junket overseas with a supplier, forensic data analysis. Now, where is this investigation? I presume there is one. How many staff were involved? Who were they? I hope there's none of them in the room with us today. And give us the reason why you've not paid the supplier who's now threatening to hold you to ransom. Because it seems to me the SAP system of tender processes has failed spectacularly and that people should actually be criminally charged for what has gone on. Also, I'd like some input in relation to the increase of police suicides, the murders of police, the morale of police. Please explain the status of available psychologists within the SAPS. There used to be a large number. I gather there are virtually none left. Or is psychological assistance now still dealt with privately by private medical aid, considering the whole macho genre within the SAPS? And has any consideration been given to making mandatory psychological debriefing after dangerous operations mandatory, prior to an officer being allowed back out there? Also, something that I feel is lacking is explanation and clear lines of a link between your expenditure versus service delivery. There's often, oh, we're just going to build a station here. There's no explanation why. There's no reason given. So it's a major issue. I don't know how many were allowed, but I'll just go on until the chair shouts. Can you please justify the spending, and I tried this yesterday, I think it comes under this particular program, the spending of the 33,402 rand per bulletproof vest. Vest that usually cost 8,000 rand. And that was for 200 vests paid to a company called iView, an Indian company. I raised it yesterday. I said, please don't let it be a Gupta-owned company. And the cost was 6.7 million rand. And reportedly, you paid 2.35 million rand to the supplier for selling you, for the right to sell you 200 vests at this exorbitant price. Again, Is there an investigation? What is happening? It seems to me your tender process needs a massive, massive overhaul.
Thank you, Honourable Colonel Barnard. Honourable Malabatsi.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. The confidence of the community in SAPS is on a downward trend, so we heard from Dr. Kenneth. What are you going to do to address this serious issue? My next one is, I want to also have a bite on the lifestyle audit. In our last interaction with IPED, it was clear that there is a serious problem of corruption in the top echelons of SAPS, which is a worrying factor. How are you addressing this? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Malabatsi. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. My question was not answered yesterday about the province's budget. I asked why Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Northern Cape have less budget. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Yes, Honourable Bailey, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just two questions from my side at this point. The first relates to the performance indicators on slide 53, in particular the one about aiming to roll out 15 mobile contact points, which, as I understand, generally refers to what, in colloquial terms, we call the satellite stations. And I think the target of 15 seems quite low, given one's general feeling or what one generally gathers about the cry from communities to have those satellite stations in their neighborhoods. And they say that police stations are either too far or they just aren't able to get to the police station easily. Now, obviously, one notes that satellite stations are always drawing from the fixed establishment of their home station. So extending that footprint isn't necessarily a multiplication or an expansion of the police service delivery. But it does go some way towards helping communities feel the police are closer to where they are. So I'm just curious to know, is there a collated global figure of what the aggregate demand is out there for mobile contact points, either based on requests and petitions from communities alongside or confirmed or clarified by any work studies that the SAPs themselves have done? I mean, I could probably name 15 locations around the country based on the past 2 years of oversights where I've heard directly from communities that they would like a police station, a satellite station where they are. Or they've had one closed and they would like it reestablished. So do we know what the global figure is generally so we can get a sense of what the target of 15 is in proportion to that? And then on slide 55, concerning the targets on the ICT environment, at the risk of repeating a question that came up yesterday, and I can't remember if there was a clear, concrete answer to it, but do these indicators around ICT and information systems and the related allocation in the budgets include allocations for a body cam and vehicle cam project, whether it's a pilot, whether we started small scale, but just to get that on the go, partly given that it is a committee recommendation, and partly given that it is, at least by a layman's logic, a sensible measure to strengthen accountability, to strengthen compliance, conduct compliance on the part of frontline members? Is it a priority? Is it in the budget? And if not, why not? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Marke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one question on internship. Just want to understand what is the objective, what happens, I mean, the whole story. Do they get a stipend? Are they mentored? If they are mentored, for what? After that, are they all absorbed? What is the focus? Are they focusing on specific, maybe dog handling or whatever? Just to have an overall understanding of this. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mushlongo?
No, thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, you recall that in our visit to KZN, we found that the state of government garage was quite problematic in many, what you call, cluster command areas, such that vehicles, times they spent, some exceed even the year, or even more than that. Now, if there is no turnaround with regard to that, because the indicator given here is only about vehicle availability, not necessarily or vehicle ratio availability to members, active members on the service. Now, what about then the breakdown? So that actually is dealt with. The reason why, Chairperson, I'm raising this is because even only if we continue not capacitating the state to have capacity to deliver services, because what is the use of us having government garage even only if you have this thing whereby even for the fitting of a spare wheel you need to outsource that to somebody instead of the government garage just to fit the wheel to the police vehicle? Because that thing opens up the state to massive scales of corruption, whereby people either inflate costs and all these things. We were told in case of Chairperson that some of the service providers are actually providing even inferior quality, yet just ripping the state. Now, even only if this thing is not addressed, Chairperson, here in the turnaround strategy, it will continue to exist, because it would mean that we are not necessarily paying sufficient attention to that, yet it is actually then opening up subs to be susceptible to serious levels of corruption within its own ranks, particularly used by external people who want job at all costs, yet actually destroying capability of subs. Two is the question of HR. Chairperson, you will know that I have forwarded, for example, the grievances of various people touching on many areas, which I think the head of HR division here will also help us on some of the latest complaints, whereby right now one of your members has just been crying, giving to me. That's the reason why I'm late even here, to say, how can I be, because my kids are being taken out of universities and all that, simply because police headquarters cannot process the finances of this particular officer of yours. Which means there is a particular serious problem, Jefferson, within the HR division of SAPS. And that's why we had that particular complaint that of that officer that went as far back as 1995. From the Eastern Cape, whereby we ended up requesting services of the head of the provincial commissioner of the Eastern Cape to intervene. 1995 till 2017, whereby a person left without receiving his pension fund. Then that tells you that there is a serious, serious problem within the HR for South African police. We cannot simply say it's a person because a person has actually served the nation. Now, because that person is no more, can no longer speak for himself within the service, then that person is just left to dogs. That is quite inhuman and quite insensitive. Now, what is it that is going to be done? I understand what is written, but what has been done to ensure that these things and this backlog is actually addressed? Because these people, they are South Africans. They need us collectively to take ownership of them, whilst inside the service and whilst also even outside of the service, because they have actually rendered their service to the nation. It's quite painful, I must say. I could not actually then, that woman is from Gauteng, crying over the phone bitterly because of failures of our HR division within SAPS. It's failing the nation, this thing. And at the end of the day, we will be doing exactly what the minister was telling us yesterday, that some police officers end up being tempted by criminals to actually do all the wrong things. Then lastly, within again the HR, at a policy level, you know that we went chairperson to KZN on our oversight again. Was the allegation of police involvement or complicity in the matter of our people in Cleveland was raised? Good that KZN police, assisted by the national task team deployed there, they have actually caught Detective Sergeant Mgwebu, and I'm told the latest news that that particular officer, for just bail application, has hired a top of the range senior counsel, which he, by virtue of things, cannot afford. But where does the department still continue paying Mdweshu? Whilst over 100 and something of our people have been killed through involvement of this particular office, though not yet sentenced, but it's clear that he won't get anything less than even life sentences, that man. But are we going to continue paying the evils of this officer? Or we are going to say again, like what we did with KGB, that no, because of refusing to sign and all that. When a police officer is actually committing terror against the people that he's supposed to protect. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Shnogu. Honourable Shnogu.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, it seems that we're busy with administration more overall. I want to say it seems it became fashion that national commissioners are investigated by IPIDs, and I would really like to hear from the national commissioner on this matter that he is investigated by IPIDs, because we're talking about people and the public that must have trust in the police. But every time since 1999, when we have a national commissioner, there's a lot of controversy around that specific person. And I want to ask that the national commissioner put it clearly in this committee this morning, that the people of South Africa can then understand where we stand with this IPIT investigation as far as the national commissioner is concerned. Chairperson, on slide 56, on the objective of sound financial management, their performing indicators. Firstly, I want to know, and it says that 90% paid within 30 days of legitimate invoices. Now, Chairperson, firstly, I would like to know, what's the difference between a legitimate invoice and then, of course, then an illegitimate invoice? What do you mean by a legitimate invoice? Do we say that we have in the system that there are a lot of invoices which are not legitimate? And then the question is, how does it happen that an illegitimate invoice comes into the process of financial management? I want clarity on that. And with that, Chairperson, why then that we have the situation with this IT situation company that complained that for 5 years, I think, Yes, all right. That they did not receive their payments. Can I get, please, clarity on that? Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Let's go to the National Commission and his team for responses.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And I would also like to acknowledge and appreciate the questions by the Honorable Members. Maybe, Chair, it would be important for me to start with the IP question of investigation. And I would like to put it correctly. IP wrote a letter through our legal services to me, asking for an interview with me. But they indicated in the same letter that I'm not a suspect. They said I'm a witness. It's written in black and white. Now, what I will not be sure of is whether are they investigating me being a witness. But again, what they wanted the interview about was the national security threat, which was operationally driven, which I don't report to IPED about it. I can only report to the minister and the president. Therefore, I could not go to the interview and share that that particular operational information. But I've shared that information with the minister. The minister is aware. So I also only heard in the media about the news, but there's no formal case that has been brought against me except that IPED want to interview me. So I don't want to accept or deny that they are investigating either me or any person. They have the investigation, but I've not been formally informed there's an investigation against me. And I would therefore then like to assure the public and clear this matter that I'm not aware of any criminal investigation against me pertaining to this particular matter. But to the authorities where I'm called upon to account, I will, and I'm free, and those authorities have been so informed, including the Joint Standing Committee, because on such matters, we also report. I've also briefed the Joint Standing Committee on the matter. That's how far I can close it. Honorable Chair, the lifestyle audit, I have made a commitment to the committee that I've instructed the project on the lifestyle audit, and then starting with senior officers. That particular project has formally taken off, is under implementation. The details in terms of what the exact progress will be given in a progress report, but General Nguyen, who's leading HR, is part. General Jacobs is part. It's an integrated project because there's various areas that are dealt with. What I'm sure of now is that five senior officers, their lifestyle audit has been completed. The rest of the process is also linked to the vetting process. But with your permission, can I also give just General Nguyen to add flesh to it?
No, thank you, National Commissioner. General Nguyen, you're welcome.
Thank you very much, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. A very good morning. Thank you, General. A very good morning to Honorable Members. In terms of the lifestyle audit, we have since conducted a lifestyle style audit of 8 members after the pronouncement by the National Commissioner. 80. And the 80, we had to prioritize those who were identified by the Auditor General, and they were reflected in the annual report. And of the 80 members, 15 of them were SMS members. We did their lifestyle audit, and it was finalized. And then, other than the 80 members who were subjected to a lifestyle audit, in terms of the vetting process, members who would have been vetted for, in particular, the top secret, it entails a lifestyle audit. And we have a figure of top management from the 32, that is lieutenant generals. We have 25 lieutenant generals who has a top secret clearance, and that entails the lifestyle audit for them to be issued with a top secret clearance. At level 14, we have 118 who also are having top secret clearance, which will mean that they were subjected to a lifestyle audit. At level 13, still the SMS, we have two, I think it's 14 of them who have a top secret clearance. The same will apply to them in terms of ensuring that prior them being issued with the top secret, their lifestyle has been audited. In terms of this financial year, we planned to ensure that 40% of members in the organization are subjected to a lifestyle audit. Other than the 40%, we will be continuously subjecting those who would have been identified through whistleblowing processes. Such members will also be subjected to a lifestyle audit. Ad hoc requests will be entertained, other than the 40% that we have planned for. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Yeah, there's maybe just a few follow-ups regarding your response. Because, of course, in terms of your top secret, there is certain questions that's been asked and certain investigations. But from our perspective, a lifestyle audit is additional. I just want to get an indication, is there, in terms of the project that the National Commission announced, was there a new form developed, apart from the normal vetting procedures, that do a wide scope of related parties, family, and so forth? I just want to get an indication, because otherwise we're not on the same page. Let's get the other members.
Yeah.
Honorable Malabatsi, Honorable Kala Barnard.
Thank you, Chairperson. Of the 80 members in SMS, that can you give us an indication of how many were picked to say, but these ones are really involved in wrongdoing? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Kola Barnard, follow-ups. Any other members on this issue?
Yes. I think General Ngwenya, we're not looking really to hear you've done 80 lifestyle audits or you've done 1,000 lifestyle audits. What we need to know is how many people have been uncovered as running private businesses, as employing relatives, as taking bribes, as earning 100,000 rand a year but spending 500,000 rand a year and driving a Ferrari. Yes. Those are the people we need to know. It's not a tick box, yes, we've done lifestyle audits. What we need to know is how many criminal members have been uncovered within your top ranks. That is what's behind this entire process and why we called for it.
Honourable Groenewald, then we are given an opportunity for...
Can we receive an explanation of the setup of a lifestyle audit? What do you do? If I'm asking you, if you say you're doing a lifestyle audit, what do you do? If you do that lifestyle audit.
On the Mutsungu, the last one, thank you.
Sure. No, thanks, Chairperson. Well, maybe I may be assisted here, Chairperson, because lifestyle audit, as far as I understand, will involve various dimensions, which are rather even not necessarily residing within SAPS, like, for example, auditing firms and all those things. Have they been, what form of methodology has been used? The reason why I'm raising this, Chairperson, I was shocked when former acting commissioner Patani was on SAFM last year, admitting openly that no, my wife was given a vehicle by a service provider, and I could see an innocent officer here who is the head of our South African policing, but not actually clear of the conflict of interest in this whole saga. And you know, if you have that situation from that level, and you ask again the same body to investigate itself in terms of the lifestyle audit, how can we be assured that we are not going to have the reputation of the very same person? Because all the things that are even threatening national security today happen under the presence of many of us here. Now, we are not new. It's not to say that maybe we came only yesterday when Patani had gone. We were here. Now, correctly, I agree and concur with Honorable Member on my side that what methodology was used, and can we also be given maybe a snip and outcome of that formally, Chairperson, not necessarily here, but formally, so that we are aware who were those who were found conflicted and all that, so that we don't go and find another Mkupane, that former acting who acted only for 2 weeks in the crime intelligence. 2 weeks in acting position, then his dirty linen came up and had to be removed. We must know now, so that when we move forward, we know we move forward with men and women who have been cleared by the system, who will be able to carry this heavy load of transforming South African police service. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, members. Let's go to the responses, General.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me first clear the page. Lifestyle audit is an over and above process other than vetting. When we do vetting, the principles of a lifestyle audit are applied. But a lifestyle audit is completely a separate process. Later on, General Jacobs will explain the methodology. When I reported earlier on, I said to the committee, as I instructed the project implementation is in progress. The project team is reporting monthly to me on this particular project. How many people has been taken through lifestyle audits and the rest, it's a report to me, not necessarily to the committee. But to the committee, my progress report is going to be saying 150 people has been taken through lifestyle audit, but these 9, they came out questionable, and this is what has come out, and these are the actions that I have taken. And I want to give a further example to the committee. With the FDA issues and the procurement, let me rather say the procurement problems that we experience at the present moment, I have commissioned a value chain forensic investigation as well as criminal investigation, in which all of us are sitting together, is Treasury, is IPT, and this our forensic audit team is DPCI, so we all sit there. Few investigations and few dockets has been opened. I have given an instruction that all the affected members around here, their lifestyle audit must be conducted. So there will be a separate report relating thereto. And any other suspicion based on the financial status of any individual, whether this person has got a top secret vetting or not, that person's lifestyle audit will be conducted because there's a matter that we need to address. My request to the committee, can I be given an opportunity, because the committee is starting this month, can I be given an opportunity to give a formal progress report, which will then be addressing what the committee would like to hear? This was just a preliminary process.
So I think the important thing is we've got assurance that the project is on the go, it's being done, it's a fully-fledged project, there won't be any shortcuts, and all risk areas will be addressed. I mean, so we will deal with the report when it comes to us. Members, is that fine? Honourable Groenewald?
I concur to that, Chairperson, but I have a problem because it seems HR has a different view on how it should be done. So can I ask the Commissioner, please, because it was openly said that if you go for a top secret clearance, then it is already included in that. There's no misunderstanding from our side. So it is good, and I know that maybe the Commissioner understands it, but I'm not so sure whether the HR understands it.
General?
Yeah, Chair. Let me first clear the understanding. I think I have given one direction to the whole team. What General Ngwenya was reporting on is the fact that I said the principles of lifestyle audit should also be applied to any vetting process, so that the over and above process, it addresses that. We don't want a person to be vetted and there's lifestyle audit dynamics that are already experienced with a particular person, but this person is given a vetting certificate. Because if there's any questionable thing pertaining to lifestyle audit, that should disqualify the person for vetting. So I think that's what General Ngwenya has been referring to. But I just need to confirm, there's one direction that I've given, and all of them, they play by the rules of the game. And they're reporting to the portfolio committee will be as per the direction that I have confirmed. And I will monitor it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Morabachi. You wanted to follow up, please.
Thanks, Chairperson. You see, when talking of top secret, that reminds me of Brigadier Pet. Where is she? And what are the situations? What is the situation surrounding her? Thanks, Chair.
Maybe we must give General Jacobs an opportunity later this afternoon when he deals with CI, because it's falling under his domain. Is that fine? Honourable Molobasi, let's deal with that then. Right. Let's go to the other responses. Yes, Honourable Abidjan, do you have got a question? Follow up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to indicate something here concerning Indian companies. Because right now what is flying in the public domain is the Guptas from India, and it seems like they are not the only company owners who are doing what is said to be they are doing. I'll read it here. It was reported that the Saps procured 200 high-tech bulletproof vests from an Indian company at a cost of 6.7 million. Which means that Saps paid 33,402 per vest. That usually sells at around 8,000. It is believed that another order of 33 million was generated, but Treasury declined the deviation on procurement procedures. The committee should now be asking, as I'm doing, because it's the right thing to get facts from new national commission to indicate to us what the import and custom duties were and what amount was paid to MKU in commission. It was also reported that the supplier was paid 2.35 million for supplying the vest to your department. May you clarify?
Yeah, thank you, member. Remember, that question was already asked by another member in more cryptic form, yeah. Yeah, but it's fine. I think it's fine. But I think you also put other issues on the table that the National Commission will come to. Let's go to the other responses. National Commissioner, thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, contract management, I have identified it as a grey area right from the day I took up office. And I also identify it as the highest strategic risk that the organization is going through. I immediately instructed General Skete when he was still DNC for Asset and Legal. He started that particular process. Currently, he has handed over that process to Lieutenant General Vuma. They will be coming to me in 2 weeks' time to present a contract management that is strategy. And that reviews the whole contract, the management approach within the organization, because its absence has actually created more problems for us. But it also further created a number of risks. My suggestion, since it's not for the first time I'm talking about it, maybe I might need to escalate it to action where we come and present to the portfolio committee and also then begin to say, what are the changes that we have brought in terms of reviewing the whole contract system within the organization. But it's above 99%. In 2 weeks' time, it will be finalized. So that is my request with regard to contract management. Then, but it goes together with the risk management strategy, because our risk management is only addressing the operational risk at the present moment, but the strategic risks, they are actually in this particular area. The review of both, I think strategic management and the other players, they've also finalized the risk management strategy. If then the committee also agrees, by the time we present the contract management strategy, we can also present the risk management as well. The budget for TMS, I'm also going to ask General Shezi to give a bit of flesh, but what I want to put forward from the turnaround's point of view is the total review of the technological requirement for policing in the country. And I indicated earlier on the type of systems that we have. They are above 80% outdated by modus operandi. Yeah. And they require review. I have therefore instructed in the turnaround that we start a review process of the current technology. We've got critical areas. We've got CI. The CI capability is presently, to a large extent, minimized by technology. Then you've got the crime detection framework, which does not only talk to detectives but also to DPCI, especially your cyber crime that it challenges. The current technology does not cover the cyber crime response fully. And we have developed this particular strategy. It also calls for the review. But over and above this, Chair, I also then need to be a little bit open and honest. I've looked into the optimal utilization of the current technology, the existing systems. Then I discovered that there's a performance management gap. The current performance management system does not necessarily hold all of us accountable for optimal utilization of existing systems. So I've also called for the review of the performance management system. So we have aligned that. So our starting point is the optimal utilization of all existing technology, all fields that are existing within SARS, including interfacing as well as integration. But the assurance that we are giving with regard to the budget that's allocated to TMS is that we are going to utilize it optimally to review the current SARS technology requirement position so that we respond to both modus operandi and as well as crime. I know there were other questions.
Yeah, General, maybe just on that review issue, because that is the crux of the matter. Or, you know, if you, because this last 3 years and your predecessors, you know, informed this committee, well, the CSIR are actually the institution doing the review. But if we analyze the outcomes and the procurement conundrum within SAPS, a lot of the issues is off-the-shelf technology, well-connected contractors who got systems that's not working for SAPS. So who is going to do the review? That is the big question. Who is going to do that review, that technology review? Is it going to be CSIR? Is it going to be SAPS in-house? Going to get a panel of experts, but because that is the issue, because it deals also with looking ahead in terms of policing the next 10 years, what is out there. So I just want to get that sense. Who is going to do that review? Thank you.
I think firstly, on the side of SAPS, Honorable Chair, it is us who must draft the user requirement for policing, because we understand policing. And we are also going to use the modus operandi advancement. We will then draft the user requirement, because actually where we lost it, I tried to trace the user requirement for policing. And I then discovered that there were gaps in terms of the critical and prominent involvement of the crime-fighting role players. Like for instance, the CI head is the one who's got the best knowledge in terms of what is the requirement. But then we come to the areas. I've had a meeting also with the DG, who preside over CETA. We have agreed that we are also going to meet. We're going to work together. They are going to assist us to look at how the user requirement can be responded to. Then I also brought in Treasury. I'm also engaging with Treasury to assist us. And from the DG who preside over CETA, he also promised me that he will undertake the revamping of CETA, so that if CETA assists us, CETA must actually assist us with an understanding, so that the technology that we acquire through CETA must respond to policing requirement. So that is the other capacity. I am not necessarily going to totally throw away what is in place, like the CSIR, because they started that particular process. We look into those particular reports. But the principle I can give to the chair is that there's areas that require policing. There's areas where we do not have the capability. We will need to source that so that they actually can assist us with the right investigation. And this is how this particular process is going to be driven. What I want us to avoid is acquiring technology that will not assist us to fight crime. And that one is what I want to eradicate. And while we also deal with this, chair, there's a highly critical point. There's certain service providers who provide technology to the state. In return, keep critical information or keep their access to critical information of the state. And there are those systems that if we take, they can also compromise the sovereignty of the state. So those are areas that we want to guard against, because we want policing to operate independently. So within government, there's also certain of the institutions that we will be consulting with as part and parcel of the guidance, like DNEL and others. So this is how I can put it for now.
Right.
I'm not sure, with your permission, General Chair, we have started the turnaround strategy so that it can also respond to the body cams. And thank you.
Thank you, General.
Sorry, thank you so much, Chairperson. The National Commissioner has covered a number of issues. I just wanted to add in part of the review process that you were referring to, that even the recruitment process for IT specialists into the environment is part of what is being looked at into as an overall. You would recall in the previous presentation that you made, we said there's a major lack of IT expertise in-house, you know, such that you are almost fully dependent on the CETA colleagues, given how the CETA Act was compiled. You know, so part of that review process will in overall look into the entire process of how do we even staff in the expertise that will look into the IT environment to assist with those compilations, even of the user requirements. But if you look specifically into the question that was asked by Honorable Mbele on the body cams as well as the issues of the drones, there were a number of issues that were presented by the committee, that were a priority of the committee. They are made provision for in the current APP. We are actually working on the basis, first the infrastructure portion of what must be done to just get the systems as we had presented it already. Chairperson would recall that I had provided a timeline specifically with regard to those projects. I think as part of what the National Commissioner will present, we can send in the phases as to the progress of those specific projects that the committee was highlighting. But also suffice to say that on page 78-79, as well as 80 of the published APP, there are specifics on the what projects are being covered in there. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, General Sisi. The other responses, General Sitole?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The people who are leaving SARS and come and do business with SARS, I must admit there's a policy gap, and we have actually learned a lesson out of the current process. It's part and parcel of the risk and control measures that we're putting in place, and the policy consideration is something that we'll be working on. But we agree with the views that has been raised by the Chair. And then yesterday's risks. Maybe I just need to relate this one together with the reason why we're not paying suppliers. Yeah, firstly, I just want to indicate clearly there's investigations, new criminal developments in the investigation that affect certain contracts, and I'm not going to say which contracts. But those particular contracts, before we pay anything further, we need an outcome on those particular investigations. And then, in the whole process of FDA and the systems that are affected, the original contracts were entered into between CETA and the suppliers. As SARPS, we have been the user. We've been receiving the services. And as we dealt with this particular matter, CETA discovered that in terms of the original contracts, there's certain conduct of the suppliers which is not in compliance with the original contracts. And as a result, they then employed a legal process into it. And given the fact that we are the user and we are affected, our services were affected, we also brought in our own legal team. So it's an integrated legal team. So because this matter is addressed in court, as a matter of agency, whether we should pay or not pay, the outcome of the court has got a bearing. And that's what we've been advised. But what I can confirm is that there's new developments in the investigation pertaining to this particular matter, and certain contracts are affected directly. And therefore, we would like to dispose of the matter correctly. So the risks, the first thing I wanted also just to start by putting right, the two systems which has been switched on, PKM as well as FPS, they've been switched on by CETA, those two. And CETA used the terms and the clauses in the old agreement which they entered into with the service provider to switch on the systems because that contract allowed them to do so. The third one is the one that they was wrongly switched off, which is going to be corrected by the service provider. But to respond to the risks, we came up with a contingency plan. And I then assigned the users to take responsibility for the implementation of the contingency plan, which was driven by both Lieutenant General Shezi, Lieutenant General Makandela, and overseen by the Deputy National Commissioners, General Mfazi and General Vuma. At the present moment, there's no, since the systems are on, there's no risk to the services. Services are continuing as usual, unless there is another switch off. And I cannot relate more on this matter because the subject is sub judice till there's a court pronouncement. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Investigation into the London trip, I immediately after appearing to SCOPA instructed General Skete for a formal departmental investigation into the two members who went there, because those members, yes, they did not pay for themselves, but there was no authority granted by us. So the matter is under investigation. Then the suicides, I am going to, from a strategic point of view, I indicated to the committee, I commissioned an organizational climate study, which to a large extent is going to relate on the findings, why the suicides, and also recommendation. But from an HR perspective, I would allow General Ngwenya to talk into the status of the psychologists. Are we listening? Yes. With your permission, Chair, can she respond on the status of the psychologist and maybe internal causes?
Thank you, General.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, General. In terms of the psychologist and the programs that we are having for the debriefing of members, we have both proactive and reactive programs. And we made it mandatory for the specialized units, members within the specialized units, to subject themselves for a debriefing in terms of the national instruction. It has to be done on a monthly basis. In terms of the numbers of the psychologists, yes, of course, we do not have sufficient psychologists within the organization. However, through the engagement with our medical aid, Polmed, we have ensured that within the programs of Polmed, there is a provision for our members to can go to their psychologists of their choices, private psychologists, where they do get services. Within the budget, the Polmed medical aid, there is provision also for such services to be paid for whenever members choose to go to their own private psychologists. We do have a number of different programs within the whole EHW, other than
the psychologists, your chaplains, also your social workers, we can forward a detailed we can forward detailed information relating to that. But also, it talks to Pillar 4 of our strategy, which talks to the wellness management, which is where it is detailed. We can share the policy if need be. Where we are, it's finalized. We are in the process of implementation in this year. But already in terms of the previous national instruction, members get an opportunity to be debriefed, especially those in specialized units. And those who are not within the specialized units, when incidents, traumatic incidents happen, they get a first responder counseling there, but then also they are encouraged to subject themselves for debriefing within their respective workstations. I must indicate here and there you find some members who may be a bit reluctant, but we continuously encourage them. Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Honourable Colour Barnard and Honourable Shlungu. Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, how many psychologists are actually left in the SAPS? I mean, I heard it was just a handful, I would just like to know the number. And I'm absolutely delighted to hear that you've made it mandatory for those in the specialist units. It's something I've been calling for 12 years something, so really a progressive step, and I think may go a far way to hopefully preventing further suicides within the SAPS. But can you tell us, I know you're focused on the specialized units, but can you do you have an idea of the majority of the suicides? What levels do they come from? Are the majority of them actually from the specialized units or from perhaps a lower rank?
Honourable Shlungu?
No, that is... I don't know whether then this point also will be well placed here, because as one raised this matter, after receiving a mirage of complaints, particularly of from women, from members who are women within the South African Police Service, of rife abuse of them, and demand even for horrible things which one cannot be privy to say by their male counterparts. I think because Captain Mieni's issue of Kwamashu is now just an open secret, whereby people who try to actually go an extra mile to protect these women, honestly, particularly as senior commanders in the working environment, senior managers simply send those people into a lion den to be eaten by lions. And these things end up affecting even families, because even only if my wife is actually raising such allegations being within the environment of the employer of South African Service, what does it mean to the family set up? And then these are the whole things that I'm saying, Chairperson. At times we will definitely need moving, maybe after these processes, engage even with gender activists or advocacy groups in order to actually look into this matter as to how can we actually get a kind of an independent structure, because those people who are whistleblowers within SAPS get victims through the chain of command. And so it means if you are a member of SAPS, you must just see no evil, hear no evil, keep quiet until you die. And that thing eats you from within. And that's why members of South African Police, some of them, end up committing very, very, very serious acts, because they live with these things. They can see some of their own colleagues doing complete illegal things, but because of this level of secrecy, which I don't know what purpose does it fulfill. If and only if a person is just committing open criminal activity, but abusing the position, and then it's General Lang. Because that investigation that General Ngabela conducted there, it revealed that some senior colonels were aware of the abuse of that particular woman in Kwamashu Railway Station Division. But what did they suggest to do? To actually then point a gun at Captain Mieni. What is that? Thank you.
Yeah, maybe while we're on that subject, and I see the acting Provincial Commissioner of KZN is also here. We also received, I think, last week again a letter from the attorneys of that detective constable who complained about the harassment case and was subjected then to a disciplinary case. Can we maybe get also from the DNC assurance? Because Anmos Longo asked for a special hearing on that in June on this whole issue, so we'll find time for it. But in terms of complaints of harassment, we raised it at the previous meeting. Is the current system sufficiently? If seniors wants to stop, the case to progress further, counter disciplinary matters, can we just get assurance that if there's harassment at the lowest level, those members are protected? Thank you. Yes, Honourable Bija.
Thank you, Chairperson. I should think prevention is better than cure. What is it that is done in this department to prevent this harassment? Because now it's becoming too much to an extent that we have some casualties committing some other unwanted things. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Let's go to the responses. General.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, in terms of members who would have been allegedly subjected to abuse, within the organization or members that are having complaints against their seniors, we have a grievance procedure that makes provision for the process that needs to be followed in terms of dealing with a complaint where the member is feeling aggrieved. And in the grievance procedure, there are time frames and the different levels and what needs to happen until it goes to the highest level, and it is a priority. There is a specific unit that deals with that. Coming to issues of maybe women that would have been allegedly subjected to such abuse, say maybe it's an alleged sexual harassment, we presented our agreement that talks to the processes that needs to happen whenever members are subjected to sexual harassment within the organization. But also we are on record having indicated that in particular the Deputy National Commissioner Human Resource Management is very passionate and makes a follow-up. I will be talking to the particular case in KwaZulu-Natal. But also, having realized that indeed there would have been a challenge within the SAPS, since 2003, as women, we came up with a formation, the SAPS Women's Network, which is a platform where, as women, we are engaging to say, how do we empower ourselves, how do we support each other towards dealing with issues amongst others, which is sexual harassment issues. And it is amongst the objectives. The Women's Network formation is active within the SAPS. I'm one of the patrons. The Lieutenant Generals are the patrons. When it comes to the specific case in KwaZulu-Natal, it was investigated. We indicated that we are monitoring at national level, and indeed we are monitoring. Where we are now, we have already appointed functionaries in terms of the discipline regulations of 2016. And then the issue that was raised by the lawyers is that they are saying we should change the chairperson who has been appointed for the specific disciplinary case. It's not the complainant that is that is charged. And then we are saying the processes is dealt with in terms of the discipline regulations. There is nothing that has been made visible to specifically say these are the reasons why we are saying this chairperson should not be allowed to proceed with the process. We are of the view that should we just agree to say no, change this person without a reason, it will be problematic. We believe we are on the right track in terms of dealing with that specific case. But if complaints are raised, like we indicated, even the very junior member knows she has got access. I gave her my number, and she has not been raising any complaints directly, other than the letter that we received from the lawyers. Oh.
Honourable Kalubana, to follow up on that issue, thank you.
Just finger here, the very fact that General Ngwenya said whenever this happens, referring to sexual harassment, you didn't say if this ever happens, you said whenever it happens. And that linked to the fact that the SAPS women felt the need to establish a women's network to support each other in terms of sexual harassment and other harassment tells me that it's quite possible that this committee is not aware that actually this is something that women in the SAPS deal with almost on a daily basis. And I fear that might be the situation.
All right, thank you, Member. General, you're welcome to respond.
Thanks, Chair. The Women's Network was established already in 2003. And I must say, we made strides. There have been an improvement. At some stage, I can make visible the figures, which, of course, it's terrible, but it's evident that we made progress. We will make visible the number of alleged cases which should have been reported, and where the investigations would have been conducted, and which cases where perpetrators would have been found guilty. Coming back on the issue of the psychologist.
You're welcome to go ahead, General.
Yes, we have a total of 110.
Thank you very much, General Sitoli. You can go ahead with the other responses. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, just to indicate, Women Network had a meeting with me just late March, and they will be presenting their fully fledged reviewed plan for support that will include the budget. Chair, the question of expenditure versus service delivery. There's something I just want to put forward. Firstly, I am presently sanctioning a study on the cost of policing in the country, and I would indicate why, and I would like to start with a caption from the National Development Plan. It says, due to the collapse of the National Crime Prevention Strategy, SAPS became an all-purpose agency with an overstretched mandate, impossible to fulfill. I think when it comes to the expenditure vis-a-vis the service delivered or the delivery that goes to the client, it's a little bit two different things. Because we are an all-purpose agency, we're spending far more than we can deliver to the client. And I'll give you a few examples. Yesterday, both myself and the minister indicated to the committee, we use part of the funds to complement the environmental design. That is one. If any municipality does not perform and the community becomes angry, public order must be deployed at a very high cost, even when it can be, it's avoidable. Yeah, to do so. Then those are some of the services we divert that budget away now from the client. Then we get into crisis policing. But otherwise, public order is doing well when they are called for, but it's at a high cost. So it's from the same, it shoots the expenditure high, but very little goes to the client. I also recently issued an instruction. The elections are coming, and there's quite a lot of events that come into play. Sometimes, on several occasions, we get it from Treasury, no additional funds, use what you already have. Now, what I already have, I've presented an APP, it's committed. Now, the one event can cost you between 5 million and 12 million. Then I must divert away from the APP. And remember, it's committed on priorities that are intended to enhance service delivery to the client. And I said to all the responsible performance agencies, this is not brought forward. And even when we come here to account, yes, we sometimes get a bit of lashes. Why is target A not met? But there's some reasons. Some of those targets, we've already shifted the budget away because we had to cater for certain events. And those are some of the things that we need to be bringing forward. But because the committee wants the assurance, and the purpose of this particular study in the cost of policing in the country, I also want to link it to the business case, so that we can establish exactly and tell everyone what is it that we spend purely on policy in the country. What we are correcting from within the organization, yes, there's part of the expenditure that goes on civil claims. And the civil claims, we also don't plan we're going to have 150 civil claims. And it's a matter that needs to be managed by us. And we then also holding people accountable when we experience civil claims. And our plan of scaling it down is also there. But maybe the assistance and the support we need is using budget committed for policing on other matters that are not necessarily policing in nature or can be avoidable, so that we direct all budget-related efforts to the client to improve, that is, the service delivery. And my final instruction has been that I no longer need a performance report that says we've achieved 112 targets. I want to know what has been the cost of achieving them, so that we are then able to relate on the cost of what we have achieved. And then it would be known exactly which is the part of the budget that we have taken to the client. But at the present moment, which I said I want to change, is to give priorities in a particular report. This is what we've done. Then give a global expenditure. But that expenditure includes everything, so I think that's what we're trying in order to give the assurance that, yes, this budget has been spent to improve on service delivery. So that exercise, I would be glad if it will be given, this is the opportunity, and we'll share it with the committee. And Chair, the 33 million on the bulletproofs, I would like, with the permission, to allow General McGuinan and General Mkhwanazi to just explain it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, National Commissioner and the Honourable Chair. Honourable Members, perhaps maybe to start, I must just indicate that as part of our trying to improve the working condition of the members in the South African Police Service, we have to continuously conduct research. So as we conduct research, some of the items that you need to research on might not necessarily be available in the country. So hence, we'll have to go abroad. Now, as part of the problem that we've had in the SAPS of police killings, the committee spoke about it yesterday, the members are dying like flies out there. And we had to investigate as to what causes that. So we had to relook at training. So as part of us looking at the training program, we have to embark on researching and trying to benchmark with other training programs that are happening elsewhere in the world. We also had to find different methods of training our members to make sure that they are well skilled so they can be able to fight out there when they are being attacked. But not only ending on the skilled in terms of training, we also have to make sure that they've got necessary equipment. Equipment ranges from the clothing that they wear, you know, the webbing, the belts, the holsters, the firearms they use, the gloves and all the other equipment that they use, as well as bulletproof vests. What we have decided as an organization is that we're going to continuously, as we conduct this research, visit some of the exhibitions that we have, international exhibitions, where we can be able to see the variety of equipment that is available out there, that we can try and look at whether are we able to acquire some of those for the use of our members. It happened that we visited, not for the first time, many times we've been visiting. There's one big exhibition that takes place in France. I'll encourage the committee perhaps to make time and go and visit when the time allows. It happens biannually. You will get in that exhibition almost every single service provider that is providing equipment or technological equipment or physical or vehicles and everything else all over the world. They all converge there and they come and market their products. So as part of us researching, we visited there. We also visited some units within France to try and benchmark on some of the things. What we've discovered was shocking to us was one of a bulletproof vest, actually the plate that was almost half the weight than the plate that we're using in the South African Police Service. So jokingly, and I'm the one that look at it, I mean, I've been using a bulletproof vest for many years in my life. So when I saw that plate, you know, I just carried it, it felt like a paper. But when I look at the back, it's written that it can stop a 9mm, it can stop an AK, it can stop all the caliber of weapons that have been used in committing crime in South Africa. Then I asked the gentleman that was there, that, is it true what you wrote on this thing, that you really, can this thing stop this? He said, yes, it can. I said, no, well, that's a joke. I would like to test it. You know, you need to be shot at so that you can see what you are telling is true. The reason why I asked that is because in the South African Police Service for the past 23 years, we've been using a bulletproof vest that is made out of a ceramic plate. A ceramic plate is very sensitive. If you drop it for a certain distance above the ground, if it falls on the ground, it cracks. So once it cracks, it cannot stop a bullet. Or if it takes one shot at it, it cracks. It can stop a very high caliber weapon, but once it cracks, it can't take a second shot on it. So that's a risk that we're having with the current vest that we are using. And when I saw that, and they said, no, it can take 7 shots in one plate, 7 bullets in one plate. And I couldn't believe. I thought, man, no, this is just a joke. It can't be true. So the gentleman that said to me, no, we've got a plant in Germany. Now, this is in France. It's not India. We're in France. And he says, no, we've got a plant in Germany. And for the matter, the person I was talking to is a white man. It's not even an Indian man. So he says, we've got a plant in Germany. We can invite you to come and test this. And I thought, okay, well, we'll see. Maybe I'll put the report when I come back. Then we'll see. Maybe we can be able to test this. Now, mind you, I'm just an operational person. I'm not a ballistic expert. Now, when the invitation came, we made a recommendation to evaluate, and we said we need to take an expert in ballistics. So there's a colonel that we took from forensic in the Western Cape who flew with, and he went to go and evaluate this plea. In his own words, he said he has never seen the evaluation, a test that was conducted to that extent. That in South Africa, from himself, been experienced in the South African Police Service, they have never evaluated the plate to that extent. So the plate was shot with 7 rounds. Not even one of them went through. 9mm was shot at a distance of about 10 meters. They used 9mm, 2 R5 rounds, 2 R1 rounds, 2 AK rounds, all 7 of them into one plate. Not even one of them went through. I'm talking about the plate, the plate that is weighing half than the weight of the one we are using. And I thought this is something strange. I've never really seen this. But we'll have to, he then recommended that, you know, we'll have to try and acquire some of them so we can evaluate them in South Africa. Now, this is a ballistic expert that make a proposal for that. And obviously, we are not dealing with procurement. We don't know the processes of how to can acquire some of these things to evaluate. But as we look at other police units also within Europe, within France, within Germany, as we're meeting them on the street, we realize they're using a similar type of lightweight vest, not what we are using as SAPS. So I started probing question as to our own guy now as to why are we using something so heavy? Our members are not wearing these things on a daily basis because they complain that it's not comfortable. So why is it so heavy? Then his answer was, it is made out of the specs that has to cater for a type of a bullet that does not exist in the country. The bullet that was perhaps used during the days of apartheid when it was perceived that the former non-statutory force members were using to attack the South African police service. Perhaps those are bullets that were coming from the European countries, you know, Soviet countries and the likes. Now, that bullet does not exist. It's called armor piercing. So for those that are familiar with bullets, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's got a black tip in front. It's a bullet that can shoot through steel. In terms of the standard, that is the plate we are using. It's the only plate that can stop that bullet. The ceramic plate is the only one that can stop that type of a bullet. But now if you are basing yourself with that type of a bullet, it means you must go ceramic. You've got no choice. The one we evaluated cannot stop that bullet. But the question then was, how often and when was the last time we found this bullet in South Africa? First, it's illegal. You don't find it. Even on illegal firearms, you don't find that bullet at all. The bullets that have been used to commit crime in the country for the past so many years is normal bullets that we buy from the shop, the same type of bullets that are used by the police, by the army and the like. They are the standard ones. So those bullets can stop, the plate that the light one can stop those type of bullets. But the ceramic plate can stop the armor piercing. The unfortunate part that armor piercing does not exist. Now our specifications were drawn based on that. The general spoke about some processes that you need to strengthen in the organization. And one of the process in the organization is that before you procure this highlighter, you will have drawn up specifications for it. Next year you want to buy another highlighter. You come back and you draw up specifications for it. Now who gives you the specification? It's the end user. Then I started asking questions as to the specification of the vest that you are using for the past 23 years. Who drew out the specification? Who was the expert who gave the information? The information I received was that it was one official, I'm not going to mention the name, one member who's not a task force member, must say that, is one member that drew out the specification who was regarded as an expert who said the SAPS needs something that can do A to Z. Hence, that specification was used to procure the vest that you are currently using. Now, the contract ends, I think, 3 or 5 years. So every time the contract ends, supply chain must go through the same process again. Go to the end user, get a specification, then they draw the specification and advertise the tender and procure. And it so coincidentally happened, Honorable Chair, is that almost a similar kind of a product is being procured by the South African Police Service. Every other contract, when it ends, another one comes and ends, another one comes and it ends. It's the same product that you're buying all the time. And the person so-called is the expert from the SAPS is the one who's determining this is the type of vest that we need. Now, we've been arguing, we've been in this parliament for many years, and we've argued that there's nothing better than this in the world. Now, I'm telling you about something I've seen with my own eyes. 7 shots in one plate. I've seen it with my own eyes. And I can challenge the committee. We can invite that ballistic expert from Forensic and is he in the Western Cape, I forgot his name, the Colonel. We can invite him to the committee to come and explain what he's seen himself. And for that matter, the very same forensic, as we acquire this vest, because we have to then ask through supply chain to see if we can acquire some of this vest so that ballistic can be able to test and see exactly, can this thing work in our country? They've given us a report, ballistic unit, because they've tested it. They took it and said they've never seen something like this, and they've tested it. So coincidentally, only later when these questions were coming out about the bulletproof vest comes from the company from India, that's only then I started inquiring from supply chain. Now, I was in France and I went to Germany. Where does India feature in this? Then when we inquired from the service provider who's an agent who brought this thing in, you discovered that it looks like that company's got some base also in India. I don't know where exactly they belong between all, but it looks like it's an international company that sells those type of vests. And I must say, Franche, I don't think they are the only ones that do that. But in the country, we don't have that type of technology, it seems like. So this was just a procurement for evaluation purposes, the 200 vests that we bought. And I don't know about the cost. I'm sure supply chain will be able to talk more about that. But the common sense says to me, you want to buy something outside the country, it needs to be imported. It's not going to cost the same as something that is made at the backyard. So this is not yet the contract in the South African Police Service. It's something that we needed to go and evaluate. That's basically where I can end. But I'll maybe request my colleagues to continue. Yeah.
I think at this stage we're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll come back and then we'll give the general opportunity also to add. Thank you, members. 10 minutes. Thank you.